If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this episode of Mind Pump, so we get real specific in this episode, but before we get started with the fitness, you know, we have our fun conversation. We start out by talking about Justin's hair.
Yeah.
Looks so nice.
It's gorgeous.
He's got a lot of it. Adam apparently found my doppelganger. This is somebody who looks like me, but not quite as handsome. We talked about the Indiegogo sex app campaign and how focus is the new IQ. And then we get into the bulk of the episode. All we talk about in this episode are the five most important first steps you should take to get the best body by summer. If you're listening to this episode when it drops, you got about 12 weeks, which is a decent amount of time to get yourself in shape. Follow the steps that we talk about in this episode, and you'll get there in the most effective way possible. By effective, I mean you'll get there quickly, but also long term. So you're not going to gain the weight back and look all terrible after summer's over like a lot of people do. Also, this month, one of our most popular MAPS fitness programs ever.
Not one of, the most popular.
50% off. You guys have been waiting for it. We got it. MAPS Aesthetic is 50% off. Now, MAPS Aesthetic is our bodybuilder, physique competitor, bikini competitor focused program. This is the program if you want to sculpt and shape your body. If your goal is to look good, you're all focused on aesthetics, and you want to specifically focus on particular parts of your body, and you like to work out.
That neck-breaking body.
Because this is a high-volume workout, and you're one of those people like, I love the gym, I love to work out, I want my body to change, I want to sculpt it. This is the program, and it's 50% off. This program, we rarely ever put on sale, so it's a huge promotion. All you got to do is go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and use the code BLACK50, BLACK50, for the 50% off discount. Justin. Boy, you so much. Take your hat off real quick. I want you to podcast with your hat off. Look at that hair.
It's getting super white.
Yeah, but it's good, though.
I'm like Doc from Back to the Future.
What's your hair?
Great Scott!
Besides white, what's your hair color? Is it brown or like a reddish brown?
It used to be really dark brown.
Really?
Yeah. Like I remember, people would think it was black for a while, and then it just
nothing black about it now.
Yeah, it's salty,
bro. You have
really salty.
You have so much hair though. Have you lost any?
That's why I'm not mad. Yeah. Like all my friends around me just thin.
Yeah.
Thin.
I'm not gonna lie. I'd rather have gray hair now. Yeah, because I could color that shit.
Yeah, but I won't, because it's then I'm pretending.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm pretending.
Really? Yeah. You've already committed that you will not color it.
Well, because now I'm already this far, you know? Like, it would be, unless I was on some TV show or something.
You could lighten, highlight. You don't need to, like, go black, jet black, or, like, a solid color. Mm. I think you could do, like, a lighter look to it.
Yeah. I thought about, bleaching it. Cause I'm gonna go on.
That's too far.
Yeah, well, I want to go like full Goose, you know, like Maverick and Goose.
So you want to go
Top Gun?
You want to make it white, or will it turn blonde?
Yeah, I think it would turn blonde.
You know,
ish.
It wasn't that long ago it was a long time ago. But I look at things on a grand scale. But you know,
like since men used to
wear wigs. With
that
was a long time ago, wasn't it?
It's just because of syphilis. I mean, we've moved forward from that.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah,
you ruined my whole theory around that. I thought it was because people just like white hair.
It's a terrible
theory.
They had problems back then.
You notice I got my beard going real short right now.
I do. I like that.
I almost shaved it completely,
dude.
Yeah,
I almost went slick.
You guys hyped up my beard too much. Everybody's asking me for this like really big beard pick. I'm like, it didn't get that crazy.
He did. He's the one to talk.
You have to make it. You have to let it.
Now
grow.
I'm like, I guess I gotta let it. Yeah, I'm gonna have to grow it now.
Are you gonna
like
tell people about your talk at CNBC?
At CNBC.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
The one you just did.
That's hilarious.
That guy is total doppelganger.
How did you get that? Did someone send it to you?
I love our listeners, dude. I open them, right? I get these, and somebody sent it to me, so I can't take credit for finding that. But when I saw it, I was like, oh shit, this is too close.
I want that. I want some of Adam and Doug and me. Like, we need the listeners to find more of those.
I mean, I get them quite a bit, but that was the first one that made me laugh. I was like, okay. At a quick glance, you could see that, you know? And he's talking with the mic on. I was like,
100% Sal. It was
I mean,
crazy.
I had people actually DM me afterwards, like, oh, what did he talk on? And like, people didn't even get the joke, you know?
Remember when you were a kid, if someone said you look like someone else, you'd be pissed, like, argh.
Yeah.
As an adult, I'm like, cool. Yeah. I'd like to meet that guy, that handsome guy.
You know what the article was actually about? It's about the where we're moving. Like, I know Gamefly is kind of like this already, but it's like the Netflix of gaming is, and I forgot.
It's all streaming?
Yeah.
But that's a lot of juice you got to stream, though. But they're getting to the point where they'll be able to do that, right?
Right, yeah. Right. Then they say that's like the next big thing, and there's a ton of companies that are all trying to jump into it.
Well, because they have all the cloud storage now to where they can make it possible. Yeah, before it was, I remember because PlayStation had their own sort of shopping cart where you could buy it and then you stream it, you know, from their own store. And it was like, but then you could only get so much. You'd only get like 3 games and then that was it.
Kids don't stand a chance, man. I am very strict with, and even in, as strict as I am, my kids still play a lot of video games because it's just the way it is nowadays. It's just the way life is. But they don't have a chance, man. Like the games that, I could play a lot of video games too, but we were not exposed to like the variety and amazing types of games they have today.
No, but we would have been just as addicted because I remember Mario Brothers. I would literally go to my friend's house because her older brother had Mario, and I would just sit there and watch him play just because it was like I was so enamored by video games. It was crazy. Like, yeah. I just loved watching even just people that are good at it.
Which is a good point that I know we tease the generation now about watching people play on YouTube, but that's just because we didn't have that shit back then, right?
Like, that's just it. Oftentimes you'll talk shit about a generation as if you're, you know, better. You wouldn't be the same.
Right. Yeah.
Like the odds are if you, you know,
if you were into video games as a kid, you're 90% likely you're probably doing the same
thing. The odds are if you were a kid today, you'd be doing what most kids do today.
Right.
That's all it is. So it's did you guys see that? I think it was a Kickstarter or what's that other company that raises money?
Indiegogo.
Indiegogo. Did you guys see that Indiegogo for the virtual like sex girl on the video? Did you guys see that?
I did.
You showed me that yesterday, I think.
Bro, blew my mind. So so what it is you get this like, it looks almost like a shaker cup, but in reality it's a you have sex with it. It's like a it's like a pretend vagina.
It looks like
the fleshlight thing.
Yes. And you turn it on and then on your computer screen is this AI girl, and of course they made her really hot, right?
Yeah.
And what you do is you have sex with the fleshlight thing, and it understands and picks up the speed, the depth, the everything you do with your movements, she'll react to. So you're literally
my swirling move.
Yeah. Yeah.
Will that pick up?
Yeah, it isn't. That didn't pick up in real life.
I'm mostly curious about it if I would even like it. I just don't think I would, but there's a part of me that's just curious. Maybe I would. Maybe I would be into that. I don't see myself getting into that. Hmm. I don't think it would be that great. I can't imagine it being.
What if your girl was like, I'll let you do that and I'll hang out with you while you do it? That'd be kind of weird.
Yeah, it would be weird. It would be weird. Although I'm sure I could convince Katrina to do something like that. She's like, whatever, you know what I'm saying? It's a fucking robot. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, she doesn't pose a threat yet.
Yeah, not yet. Anyways.
But it raised a shit ton of money, apparently. That's the future, dude.
Wow.
That's going to be weird, man.
I mean, that's so weird to think about. Because I know they had that for like some of those cam girls and all that. Like you could interact with them if they had another device on their end.
Really?
Yeah, and it was like remote to where if you know, she did something by inserting it, like you would feel it on the other end. Like same concept, but I was like, I thought that was like way far. Like they're just like in prototype.
I just imagine like, you know, having internet problems and shit. Like
you know, it's all interrupted.
Yeah, like buffering. You know, you're like, fuck. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Like you're just about to go.
Yeah. And then just kill it. You know what I'm saying?
No.
hack your buddy's computer. So yeah. Like right, like about 5 minutes in.
Right.
Turns into
crash.
Abuse
your little
system.
Sister's downloading something downstairs, so it fucking slows down the whole process.
It's like and all of a sudden, hey, oh shit.
Hey, did you do your homework?
That's gross,
that's
man.
That's the ultimate block right
but,
there.
But I mean, it's gonna be weird, man. It's gonna be so what are they calling it? It's like a war of attention right now, a war of immersion. All these tech companies, they're trying to just fight for your, what do they call it, the attention economy? Have you guys heard this term before?
Yeah. So I just commented on Danny's post the other day. He was talking about something, I can't remember what he was talking about with intelligence. And I was saying that, you know, they say, and I don't know, remember where I read this, that focus is the new IQ. And that it goes right to the point that we were talking about Elon Musk. And real soon here, we all are going to have access to all the right answers super fast, right? So most people are going to be pretty fucking smart. Even if you're not yourself, you'll have access to it. So in turn, it'll be like you're that smart. The next thing will be how many people, the focus and the attention and the ability to get non-distracted from things is going to be the real.
That's going to be everything.
Right.
Yeah, that and critical thinking.
Right.
Like I don't see a lot of critical thinking anymore. And two, this is where you start wondering how the hell can people really subscribe to like flat earth and all these things that like people are just getting like duped into this like thought process. And it's like they've just lost the ability to critically think about these subjects. Like,
bro,
they just think that, oh yeah, maybe it could happen.
Because the thing with conspiracy theories that fucks with human psychology is that when a conspiracy theory starts to grow, the more you push back against it, the bigger it grows.
Yeah.
So the flat earth thing, everybody's like, you guys are idiots. Everybody, the more you push out against it, the more they're like, see, everybody's in on it. It's a conspiracy worldwide.
Right.
You know? And they're
trying to hold our information back.
There's a documentary on the flat earth.
I watched it.
Did you?
I did. And you know what? I thought they did a good job, only because like
good job at proving it?
No. If you watch the whole thing and you have a critical mind, you'll see that they're literally exposing all of the flaws of that train of thought. And they literally, at the end, did experiments that failed, like miserably, like 3 times. And they still didn't want to believe the results they got.
Oh.
So it proved that the Earth was, in fact, round, you know, a globe.
Right.
And so what was good about it, I thought, was that they weren't like completely shitting on these people. Like they were showing, you know, their train of thought and like how they got into it. But also like they had a guy, there was this scientist and they had a convention, I think it was for NASA. And so they actually had a speaker come up and he was like, you know, like instead of like immediately condemning these people, like why don't we look to these people as like potentially being interested in this subject matter of like, you know, physics and sciences and, you know, like how do we steer these people into like sound practices of like empirical data and get them more into the testing part of it, right? Because like some of the people there, they're not all like completely like stupid, like they got succumbed to this idea. But
obviously not, because they've got enough people to follow it. Like it's someone, whoever's leading that theory and that idea probably has a very good, compelling argument. You know, it's like, it reminds me of like trying to argue with someone,
it just doesn't hold,
somebody who
hold
runs
up.
An MLM. Like if you run the fucking thing, you've learned how to overcome all the objections that the other group is telling you is stupid. And so whoever is probably presenting the information, they've found holes in things that we've done before. And so I'm sure that's what makes it hold water.
Yeah, I just liked that approach because it was like, it was more of a challenge. Like he was challenging like true scientists to get them more involved in like the process of why like there's peer reviewed things, why there's like, you know, like if true science is always questioning like results and like it doesn't always, you know, replicate.
Well, governments have known about this for a long time. Have you guys heard of the propaganda technique, a big lie, or the big lie? So Hitler knew about this, and he talked about how if you told a lie that was big enough that people would believe it, because they would believe that someone could not have the impudence to distort the truth so infamously. So like the bigger the lie, the more likely people are to believe it. And what bigger lie can you think of than
we're not on a globe,
we're on a flat earth, you know, something we just proved
so outlandish
hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago,
right?
You know what I mean? So if it was something like, you know, the earth is actually, you know, 2 kilometers smaller than they say it is, everybody would be like, nah,
yeah,
that's bullshit. You know, the earth is flat and the sun revolves around us, like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's true. You know, it's right. Propaganda technique. It's really crazy. Anyway, I wanted to cover on this episode, I know this episode is going to probably drop. When are we dropping this one, Doug?
March.
Is it sometime in March?
Early yeah, soon, first part
right?
of March.
So right around March and April, people start to really think about, or, you know, kind of getting in shape for the summer, getting lean. At least they should. I hate it when people are like, hey, it's summer today, I want to get lean by summer. It's like, well, it doesn't work that way. You should have thought about this
back in March
or April at the latest.
Yeah, depending on how far away you are.
So we should talk. I want to talk about just, you know, steps, like in basic. I think sometimes we get lost in the complexities of what we talk about, because we talk so often about health and fitness that we forget that a lot of listeners just need to hear, you know, tangible steps and things that they can do, things that we might take for granted, but things that we 100% talk about when we meet a new client. Like, mm-hmm. as a personal trainer, when a client hires you, there's like, you know, 3 or 5 things that you always cover and talk about.
No, I love this idea, because I think, and I love that you're bringing this up now, because I think some of the things that get people into making bad decisions and the wrong ones towards this goal is because they procrastinated and they waited too long. Because now it's a month out and it's like, okay, summer's 30 days away, you know, and this is a question as a trainer I used to get all the time, like, hey, what's the fastest way for me to get in shape from now till
immediately? It's a compromise.
Exactly. So immediately, I already have to throw out a lot of things that I highly recommend that people do that are the right steps to set them up for long-term success, to not only get them in the best shape they've ever been in their life, but also have created good habits for mm-hmm. themselves so they maintain that. Because I don't care who's asked me to get in the best shape of their life, all of them want to keep that if they can. But the reality is most people don't. Most people go from one extreme to the other. And so I personally, I think that the number one thing for me, so when I think of, like, you know, like the 5 steps for the best body by summertime, I'm thinking, okay, number one, the first thing that I'm doing with somebody is, like, the first thing I do with every client I take on is I want them first to track what they're currently doing. And I don't want them to impress me with, you know, oh, I ate this salad today, Adam, and I'm eating, you know, don't go out of your way to eat really good because you've started tracking. No, track what you pretty much normally do.
This is huge. This is huge. This is always the first thing that you want to talk about, because people simply do not know. Like, most people right now, besides the fitness fanatics, most everyday people who are even listening to this podcast, if I could talk to you personally and ask you, how many calories are you eating a day? How many grams of protein are you eating a day? How many grams of carbohydrates and fats? Do you know how many calories you're burning or what your movement looks like? If I ask you these questions, at best, you're going to give me estimations. You're going to be like, well, I probably eat around 2,000 calories. I probably eat around this many grams. The funny thing is, you literally have no idea. In fact, they've done studies on this time and time again, and I've experienced this as a trainer as well. When people are always way off.
Oh yeah,
what they're actually doing.
Wait, always.
I can't believe how many times I've had clients tell me, like, I don't eat that many calories. Hey, we start tracking. It's like, you're eating 3,000.
Including myself. I want to put that out there. Like, I mean, and I think that's when, like, the light bulb went off for me, where this became, like, mandatory. Like, before, I wasn't like this. I was the trainer who would print a meal plan off. I would do your body weight. I would plan your goal. I would guesstimate based off of that about where your macronutrients should be. Put you at a 500 deficit, and then I write this meal plan out and say follow it. But what I realized was, one, everybody's at a different starting point. It doesn't matter if you have if you're 5'5 and weigh X amount of pounds, and you have a friend who's exactly the same. Metabolisms can be completely different, so your starting points should be different.
That's
and
right.
I also realized when I started to track my food, every time I go back to tracking, it's never exactly what I think. So if you guys were to ask me, challenge me, because I'm not tracking right now, like, Adam, guesstimate where your macros are right now. And I were to just kind of rattle them off and doing the best I could to do that, 100%, I'm wrong.
Yeah.
It's
and you're going to be closer than the average
right.
person.
I would think that I should be a lot closer than the average person. It's not a matter if I'm wrong or right. It's a matter of how wrong I am.
Yeah.
And that is why this part, I think, is...
It's very revealing.
Very, very revealing.
Especially with the new person or the new client or somebody who's never done this before, because they don't know that they don't know. Mm-hmm. They literally have no idea. Now, when I first started personal training, this was a lot harder to do. Like, when I first started training and I would teach people to track... We used to have a nutrition book that they had.
Calorie King.
Yep. And it had common foods, you know, how many calories, how many grams of this, that, and the other per ounce. So 3 ounces of chicken breast has this, and these foods have that. And then they would have some popular food, you know, restaurants and stuff that you could go to. And so what people used to do is they would weigh things, look in the book, write it down, add it up themselves. Mm-hmm. It was a lot more work. Well, today... way easier.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's so easy.
It's so much easier now. There are so many apps you can get. Fat Secret is a good one that you can literally...
MyFitnessPal.
That's another one.
Yeah.
You enter in your food, enter in what you're eating, and at the end of the day, you'll know what you ate. And literally, when we say track your food, that's all you're doing right now. All you're doing right now is entering in what you're eating. And now, this may require that you weigh your food... and measure it at first. And this is important because most people, if you ask them to tell you what 3 ounces of chicken looks like, they actually have no idea. In fact, most people would, you know, are underestimate. So they say, oh, that looks like 3 ounces of chicken, or overestimate, and it's actually more like 5 or 6 ounces, right? So weigh your food, start tracking, and start paying attention to, you know, what is going in your mouth, including what you drink. And this right here is going to be the information that you're going to need to work on your diet and nutrition. If you don't do this, if you don't track, it's going to be very difficult. Because what ends up happening when you don't track is the way people tend to get leaner when they don't track is they just cut huge swaths of food out of their diet. Like, okay, I'm just not eating carbs, you know, or I'm just going to skip this meal, or I'm not going to do this, which isn't a very good long-term strategy. You're just not giving yourself lots of information.
Yeah, it's a lot bigger. Of a thing you're trying to implement versus like just finding a couple of those things. Like, I remember going through this process with one of my clients, and like he had no idea that just snacking on nuts like accumulated so many calories for him. And like, because he thought that, well, maybe some of the desserts or maybe some of the drinks were like, you know, the biggest offenders. But really, we did the math and looked, and it's like, oh my God, like you're getting so many calories just from nuts. And that was just one thing you could easily fix.
Well, this is why, too, I like to at the very beginning is, okay, so now I've got you to track. And again, I don't want you trying to impress me. Just eat the way you eat.
No, you got
to
track what you're doing
right
normally.
And then the main things I'm having them look at protein, fats, carbs, fiber, and sugar. And those are the main things that I'm having a client look at because, in my opinion, these are the areas that we have the greatest offenders. Either protein, typically I'm under-consuming. That's what I get a lot of clients that don't get enough of protein. Healthy fats, a lot of people miss on that. A lot of people have a hard time getting your good fats. Carbohydrates, probably the most common one to be over-consumed, eating way more than they need to, especially from where they're getting the carbohydrates. And then total fiber. Fiber is a lot of times, especially if you're not somebody who's eating a lot of processed food that's infused fiber, getting fiber through whole foods sometimes is challenging for people. So teaching them that. And then sugar is probably the most abused one out of all of them, is kind of seeing that. And so once you kind of look at it, I don't throw the whole thing at a client. I will take...
Yeah, you don't say, eat this much protein, fat, carb, fiber, eliminate this, add that.
Right. And so if you're a person listening right now, you could take your weight, your sex, and put it in and say, what is the optimal amount of protein I should eat? Or what is the optimal amount of fat I should eat? And you could get that number for yourself. And then you should compare that, especially with the essential ones, proteins and fat, right? Those two, you want to at least know that you're...
Now, why are those essential? It's important we communicate that.
Well, essential means we would die without
you need them.
Yeah. Right.
That's what you mean. Not essential like, they're the, like, you know, oh, everything else isn't important. Everything's important. But proteins and fats, you have to have.
Right. Mm-hmm. So and so that they take a priority in targeting, in my opinion. So if these are the most important of the macronutrients, let's first address those. Let's first make sure you're getting adequate protein and adequate fats. And that's all I'll have them really focus on at first.
So you just pick like one or two things.
Yeah, one or two things, and start. And what's kind of neat is what I've found over time, even though I wouldn't overcomplicate this for a client, is when I have somebody who's under consuming on the proteins and fats or not hitting their targets, they're overdoing it on the sugar and the carbs. And when I get them to just focus on getting what their body needs for protein and fats, it naturally reduces the sugar and the carbs.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's just a beautiful thing that it works. And you're not having them worry about it, but you're just like, hey, we are kind of grossly under consuming. You're only getting seven. This is common, having this conversation with a female client of mine. You're only getting 60 to 70 grams of protein a day. I'd like you to be more 90 to 120-ish. So let's, you know, and get them focused on that. And all of a sudden, their sugar goes down because now they're having to go after mm-hmm. meats and foods that have higher protein in them. And so you kind of see this natural balance.
Yeah, I think it's important, too, to talk about good sources of the macronutrients.
Yeah, food quality.
And I forget about this, too. I forget about this a lot, you know, because we podcast and I don't train as many people. But I used to have to communicate this to almost every single client. Mm-hmm. They would ask me, like, okay, where are good sources of protein? Mm-hmm. All right, good sources of protein are animal meats. So, you know, all your fowl, chicken, turkey, your beef, you have lamb meat, fish. High quality dairy is a great source of protein if you are not intolerant to dairy. So those are probably your best high sources of high protein, where you'll be able to get protein pretty easily. Fats. We can talk about fats. Coconut oil, great source of fat. High quality meats have good sources of fat. Avocado, very, very good vegetable source of fat. Olive oil, that's a good one. For people who
eat nuts.
Nuts is a good
nuts
one.
Nuts
and seeds are very, very good, healthy source of fat. Dairy fat can be okay if you don't have an intolerance to them. Carbs. Carbs, I like to tell people to stay away from processed forms of carbohydrates.
So in a box or a wrapper?
Yeah, and the reason why I do that, it's not because they're inherently unhealthy, although processed foods tend to be less healthy than whole natural foods. But the main reason why I say stay away from processed carbs is just because they're so palatable that they tend to increase your desire to eat more food.
So potatoes, yams, rice. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the areas that I'm
fruit.
Fruit. I'm mm-hmm. pushing clients towards that direction of trying to get your carbohydrate
instead of like bread, you know, pasta, cookies, crackers, those types of things.
And what's great is if you've shifted their thought process into targeting the healthy protein or the right amount of protein they should be intaking and getting it through Whole Foods, and then targeting the fats that their body needs and getting that through Whole Foods. And then I'll just saying, hey, eat, you know, rice, potatoes, yams, fruit. It's kind of neat how that everything kind of natural without them having to get crazy
on
like, oh,
weird.
Weigh this, you have to do this. It's just like target those things. It's amazing how that will start to balance out.
Yep.
And when I'm doing this with clients at the very beginning, so when this is your first week or two even, I want you eating when you definitely feel hungry. Like I don't want to be really trying to restrict food yet. I'm wanting to kind of see what your body's natural signs of, you know, hey, I'm hungry, I want to eat now. Go ahead and eat it. If you're eating from the, if you're hitting your protein, you're hitting your fat, you're choosing those types of carbohydrates, I'm happy with you consuming whenever you're mm-hmm. pretty much hungry and kind of tracking that and seeing where homeostasis is for your body.
I think the whole key with tracking is just at the end, and I typically will tell a client to track for between 1 to 3 weeks. And once we have all the data in front of us, we can sit down and look at it. And usually what it tells me is how many calories you're consuming on a regular basis, which typically they're consuming around maintenance, unless they're gaining weight through that period. But usually they're about maintaining. So I'm like, okay, I see here that you average, you know, 1,800 calories a day. So that tells me that that's probably your maintenance. And then we see your protein intake, fats, and carbs, and we can start adjusting those. But we need to have that data. That's why tracking is so important. Mm-hmm. This is also why it's important to have people track their movement so that they can see how much I'm actually moving. You know, when they first came out with really good movement trackers, like the Body Bug. Remember when the Body Bug first came out by Apex?
Game changer for me.
Here's what blew me away. I remember we first got them. And, you know, at this time I wasn't with 24 Hour Fitness, but I did work with Apex and they had sent us Body Bugs. And I remember giving one to, at the time, my wife at the time. And she put it on and we were tracking her movement. And so she was doing 30 to 45 minutes of cardio, Monday through Friday at her work, they had a little, you know, a little gym that had cardio equipment. So she'd go in there at lunch and do about 30 to 45 minutes. And what blew me away was how much more calories she burnt on the weekend, or how much more movement she did on the weekend than she did during the week. And she didn't work out on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And so when I looked at this, because what it would do, the body bug was kind of cool because it would tell you, it would give you this general amount of calories that it would say you were burning. What blew me away was that here she is working out Monday through Friday, but because she did 30, because she, all she did was that cardio, and the rest of the day she's sitting down at her desk. Saturday and Sunday she's not doing cardio, but she's up cleaning the house, she's going to the mall, washing the car, whatever. She was burning more calories on those.
That's what blew me away, was when you started to compare and contrast workouts to just everyday lifestyle functions. So different, like going out, doing things like chores around the house, you know, being outside, hiking, like all these types of things. It started to really add up throughout the day because, you know, this is a consistent movement that they're showing throughout the day, which would add up.
I'll tell you what blew me away was the discrepancy between certain days.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, and I remember seeing, so I
got Sundays.
When the body bug first came out, I tested it on myself first. And what I found just that blew me away was that on Monday, when I would book 10, 12 clients all day long and I'd be training all these clients, whether I worked out or not, was like a 5,000 calorie burn day. And then Sunday, when I sleep in till 10, I watch a little TV or watch football during football season, I could only, I would sometimes only burn 25 to 2,600. So you're talking about a 2,500 calorie difference. And also what blew me away was, guess when I would probably make the worst choices?
Yeah, when you're lounging around.
Lounging around, watching fucking football.
Pizza
or beer or just chips. Or whatever, pancakes and syrup and whatever in the morning for that Sunday. And so what I was realizing is the days that I would make the worst decisions nutritionally were on some of the worst days that I could do that, when my body wasn't needing any of that, wasn't going to utilize a bunch of that, all that load of sugar and calories that I was getting. And so that to me, and when you talk about numbers like, you know, and I know this is a generic number, but I still like to use it to give people the visual that 3,500 calories basically equals a pound of fat, that in a single day, if I ate the same way that I was eating on Mondays to support all the movement I was doing, if I ate that same way on Sundays, I could potentially add a whole pound of fat easily
in one day.
And that's staying consistent with my eating. That's not saying that I overdid it, too.
And that's why
that's alarming.
Yeah, and that's why tracking movement is so important, because when you track your movement, you can see like, oh, wow, you know, I went for a walk earlier today and I thought I had all this activity, but really I wasn't doing much at all because, you know, and this is what ends up happening. Like if you ask people, hey, are you active? They'll be like, yeah, I work out every single day, not realizing that the rest of the day really counts a lot more.
Yeah.
And so tracking movement is so important. Like I'd give, and you can, by the way, you don't need to use these complicated, machines.
I was just going to say, so there is like just your health kit. If you have an iPhone, that is a pedometer. Mm. Like you have ways to track your movement without having to go buy a Fitbit, without having to go buy these fancy watches, all these different things, which, I mean, for me, I like having that, you know, if I'm really on a kick of like, I want to learn patterns. I want to see it, you know, visibly, like where my movement is, and then kind of adjust accordingly. I don't tend to stick with it for very long, but I do want to know what that looks
like.
Well,
I'm glad you brought up the point of not having to spend money on the big trackers, because here's the thing that ends up happening. This is one of the most annoying things that I have to answer via DM into questions when it comes to these trackers, is which is more accurate. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the iPhone is the shittiest and the Fitbit 2000 is the fucking best.
Yeah, as long as it's consistent.
Yeah, you're just looking for consistency. It's the same thing as like comparing different forms of body fat testing. It doesn't matter which one you decide to use. Don't get hung up on the actual number and being like, oh, it says I only take 4,000 steps, but this thing says I take 7,000, so one of them's way off. It doesn't fucking matter. Stick with one of them and use that one all the time, because all you're trying to do is create new behaviors. So that's the first step, is to track for that week, and then I tell a client, okay, whatever tracker you're using doesn't fucking matter. So you track for that week, and then we divide it by 7 and go, okay, you're averaging 6,800 steps a day. Okay, so we go into week 2, I'm barely going to move that needle up. So I tell that client, like, okay,
what do you do, 500 or 1,000?
Yeah, 500 to 1,000 at first. Yeah. I just want to, and I want them to just say, hey, pay attention to your steps for the day. make sure you don't get anything less than 7,200. Don't go out of your way to blow that way out of the water. Just keep an eye on it throughout the day and make sure that you stay on pace to always hit over 7,500.
Dude, I had a client who used the step tracker, and they wanted to do 30 minutes of cardio every single day. And they hadn't done any cardio at this point. They were just getting started. And so this is what I did. I had them track their steps, and I said, okay, here's what I want you to do. And this, by the way, is something I learned later on in my career, and I was far more successful with clients using this strategy. And so what I said to him is, I said, look, I don't want you to do 30 minutes of cardio every day. All I want you to do is park at the end of the parking lot at work, and then during work when you have to go to the bathroom, go to the bathroom on the opposite side of the building. That's it. I don't want to see anything else. And he actually, just from doing that, and people think that's stupid. Oh, walking, parking further, taking the stairs instead of the elevator, you know, walking a little further, you know, the bathroom, whatever. It all added up to more than the 30 minutes of cardio, whatever.
Right, yeah.
Now here's why that's more effective. It's not because it was more calorie burning, although it was. It's because 30 minutes of cardio is something you're taking out of your day. You have to drive to the gym or change your clothes, get on the cardio, do your cardio. Then you're done with your cardio, you're sweaty, change again, go back to work. This was just his regular life. Like, all you got to do is take your regular life and inject a little bit more activity throughout it, and it all adds up. I mean, think about it. 30 minutes of cardio all at once is the equivalent of 6 5-minute walks throughout the whole fucking day,
right.
Which if you do that throughout the whole day, you don't even notice it. You don't even notice that you just did a bunch more activity.
And that's the key, is that we're trying to create behaviors here. We're not in a race to what's the fastest way to get you to burn X amount of calories. Like, no, of course, getting on a treadmill, blasting yourself for 30 minutes is the faster way. But what's sustainable for the rest of your life is just learning to incorporate habits. I mean, I know in previous episodes, I've talked a lot about this, how, you know, Katrina and I make these habits now of, on days when we know, like especially like a Sunday, when we do sleep in, we already know that we're losing 1 to 2 hours of movement that we're used to having on a weekday. And because of that, we always make a conscious effort to go for a nice stroll those days. Like, it's like I'm not going to miss Sunday's stroll. Like, we are going to take it either at the end of the day and walk extra further with the boys, or go by ourselves and just incorporate that. And what's beautiful is if you're in a relationship, or you have a partner, or you have a time, or you want to use that as your time alone, like, you can also make it into like a like killing two birds with one stone, where
feeding two birds with one stone. That's what I like to say.
Yeah, sorry, scone. Yeah. All right, Peter.
Yeah, thanks, Peter.
Right, so it's something that I'm also, wow, this is improving my relationship, because I'm carving off 30 minutes of walking with my partner, where we don't have any electronics, we're just spending time with each other. It sparks good communication. It keeps us very in tune with each other. Oh, and by the way, now I'm getting an additional 1,000 to 2,000 steps. That's my new target.
Well, that's funny you bring that up, because I was thinking of how to interject that, because the biggest thing that I found, like, I was trying to incorporate more cardio, more steps, more movement, you know, to get in, and realize, like, I was getting the most amount of movement when I was cleaning, when I was contributing, when I was outside, you know, doing stuff outside my house to get things all in order. And it's like, let's take our selfishness around going to the gym and getting in self-improvement. Let's take some of that and benefit the people around you. You know, it's like a crazy concept, but, you know, this I can literally do what I need to accomplish, but also benefit my relationships, benefit my family, and just kind of bring everybody into it.
Well, when you track, and this is why it's so important. Again, you know, it's taking you from the unconscious and competent stage to becoming conscious of all of these things, to becoming more aware. You know, this may change the trips that you take. You know, like, you know, if Jessica and I are talking about something we want to do together and enjoy, and I track my movement and I'm aware of it and I know I'm not moving much, that may dictate what we do. And I may say, hey, let's go to the city and walk around the city, which is a fucking great time. We have a great time doing it, but I've injected this activity into, you know, something I was going to do. The other thing, I had a client who did this once. I had a client, I told her, I said, hey, here's what I want you to do. Stop using the downstairs bathroom. If you have to go to the bathroom, go upstairs. That's all. Do you know how much they increased her steps on a daily basis?
So,
by like a few hundred.
Simple.
It was nothing. It was really nothing. It was literally you're going to the bathroom anyway. Rather than using the downstairs stairs bathroom, just use the one upstairs that's furthest away from you.
I got to use the one outside.
Yeah. You got to use the outside.
I've done things like that. I think I've shared this on the podcast a long time ago, too, where I used to get a book of stickers that were just colored circles. Each color had a different meaning for it. So, like, you know, blue is squats, you know, red's push-ups, something else is pull-ups, whatever, right? And I would have them stick it at different places, like the refrigerator one goes, the mirror in the bathroom, another one goes, the TV, another one goes. And it's like, okay, when you see that dot, when it passes your vision and you make contact with it and you see it, like at that moment, do five of these. Like, that's it. Like, I'm not trying to get you to do a half-hour workout, bust ass. Like, do five squats. Do five push-ups. And it's amazing. You put those dots around the house where you pass on a regular basis. You just get in the habit.
It makes such a huge difference because you're talking about, you know, doing 3 to 5 push-ups when you pass a part of your house. That ends up turning into 30 to 50 push-ups throughout the day. Well, you do them all at once. It's a crazy workout. You do them spread out throughout the day. It takes no time.
Right.
And it starts to become a part of your behavior. And that's even a more extreme one. I was just talking about just trying to move a little bit more and being aware of your movement. Now that they are tracking their food intake and they're tracking their movement, then you got to start taking steps, right? Now, we talked about increasing activity, taking those steps, but we didn't really talk too much about what steps to take with food. And if you're trying to get in shape for summer, most people are thinking about getting leaner, right? Most people are like, okay, I want to get leaner for the summer. There's one thing that you cannot get around. I don't care what kind of diet you're on. I don't care if it's low carb or low fat or vegan or carnivore. At the end of the day, if you want to get leaner, you have to eat less calories than your body burns. That's the bottom line. It's a law of physics. You can't get around that. But now that you're tracking your food and you know how many calories you're consuming, now you know how many calories to consume in order to lose body fat. As far as a cut is concerned, I don't know how much you guys like to cut clients out first.
Well, this depends, right? So there's some things we have to address before I just allow someone to go into a cut, right? First of all, you have to be your metabolism has to be prepared for that, in my opinion. So if we're getting ready now for summertime and I have a client and that we track their food and we find out they're only eating 1,100 calories, I don't want to restrict any more calories.
Where are you going to go? Right.
Right. So
less than that is unhealthy.
Right. So we're actually going, and I'm still going to do all the other things we said, creating more movement, tracking your food, good habits. But now instead of us restricting calories right now, I'm going to increase a little bit of healthier, better calories, trying to get their calorie intake up with pairing that with strength training. Because if they're strength training,
you're trying to get their body to burn.
Right. I need them to speed their metabolism up a little bit. And I'm hoping that because I've created a couple new habits of moving a little bit more, that the additional calories aren't going to be stored as fat because I'm getting them to move a little bit more. So that's kind of how I negate the calorie increase if you're really, really low. Now, if you're in a healthy place and you're not somebody who's eating low calories, you know you've been eating like a slob for the last 3 months or since Christmas.
I haven't heard that word in a long time.
you know who you are. If you're eating like that, then I actually don't really like to cut more than about 500 calories, especially if they're doing a good job of also slowly moving up the movement.
That's what I see.
Because you're already creating a nice
depth. I've noticed if I go if I do more than 500 calorie deficit, so if I take someone to 1,000, which is the most that I'll typically take anybody, at about 1,000 or right around 700, they start to feel it. They start to feel the hunger. Oh, it starts to become very,
dramatic.
Yeah, they feel like they're dieting. Yeah. You know what I mean? Really, really hard.
And not to mention, very few people have such a healthy metabolism that they're actually above 2,000-3,000 calories higher than a good place for them to be. So you don't have a lot of room to cut. So, you know, if you get somebody who's only at eating 2,500 calories and you cut them 1,000 right out the gates, they're already down to 1,500. Well, where do you go after their first plateau? Right, yeah. So, you know, it does really matter kind of where they're eating. And this is also something that you can Google, like what's a healthy amount of calories somebody at this size of weight should be eating? And you can get some pretty good ideas.
Where do you like to see your male and female clients at before you cut them?
A generic number?
Yeah, just the average person. Because, I have my numbers for like people who work out a lot and a lot of stuff, and then I have my numbers.
A generic number, I like my girls to be around 2,500, and I like my guys to be around 3,500.
Okay.
So a minimum of those numbers. Mm-hmm. Like I've had women that I've had up into 3,000 before and that high. And I've had guys at well above 4,000 or 5,000 before, but that's about as kind of low as I want you to be. If you're,
and that's a pretty good metabolism.
No, it is. That's a health. That's where I want you to be. So if I get you as a female client at 2,000 and that's where you're maintaining, I actually would prefer to build your metabolism up before I just start cutting you for the, especially right now, if we're planning this right now before the summer. And I'm trying to do this the healthy and right way.
Well, they'll have technically about 12 weeks, right?
Yeah, it's a good amount of time. So the first 4 or 5 weeks, I'm really trying to balance their diet out, get strength growing, build some muscle up, hopefully boost their calories up to 2,500 to where I can then go back the other direction.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you cut 500 underneath what you're burning. That's going to equate to, you know, maybe a pound of body fat loss a week generally. But if your metabolism is speeding up, it could be a little faster. But I don't like to cut women. I don't like to ever get a woman's calories below 1,500. That's the lowest typically I'll let a female get to, except for maybe real short periods of time. And men, I don't like to get them below 2,000. That's the lowest I'll ever let them get.
And that's why I made the point about 2,500 for my,
because some room.
That only gives me two cuts, right? That only gives me a 500 drop and then another 500 drop. And, you know, it only takes their body about 2 or 3 weeks before they normally start to plateau from a calorie restriction like that.
Yeah, because what you don't want to do is you don't want to end up in a situation where, you know, here you are, you're following our advice, you're tracking your movement, you're tracking your nutrition, and now you're like, cool, I'm going to cut. I have 12 weeks to get lean for summer. At the end of this cut, you're eating 1,100 calories a day. You're in a tough position now, right? You're in a tough position. What you're doing, you're setting yourself up for potential rebound. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about rebound is typically the type of behavior that rebound looks like is people don't typically come out of super low calories and come out of them real slow. It usually doesn't work that way. Usually they go real low calories, summer's over, I can't take this anymore, I need more food, and then they quickly ramp up their food intake. Yes. Yeah. And what they're finding now is that actually will increase the number of fat cells that you add to your body. Believe it or not.
Crazy.
Which, you know, usually when you gain or lose weight, it's fat cells shrinking or growing. But when you do the extreme cut and then the extreme food intake afterwards with like the big bulk after, you actually increase the number of fat cells on your body, and we're not sure if those ever go away. So you
you're telling your body you're in a state of famine. And you need to pack away more stored energy as much as possible.
What's happening is, and the theory is that because you were so, let's say you were 1,100 calories, right? You dieted, your metabolism was slow to begin with. You cut it down to 1,100. Summer's over. You're like, fuck this. I can't do this anymore. And you start eating 2,200 or 2,300 calories, which is easy. So for people who are like, I wouldn't jump that much. No. It's really easy to eat an additional 1,000 calories. It's a piece of cake, literally a piece of cake. So cake. If you did that, your body, because it went from so low to so much higher, what it's doing is it's setting itself up to be able to store more energy and capture more energy in the future. And the way it does that is by adding fat cells. It is literally preparing you for the next round of low calorie and high calorie. Mm-hmm. So that next time, boom, I could store those extra calories. That's why it's so important that you do this the right way. But it is important to know that in order to lose body fat, you have to be in a deficit. And even if you eat super healthy food, if your body's burning 2,000 calories and you're eating 2,000 calories, you're not going to really lose any body fat. Now, here's a good question I get a lot. What should people focus on cutting? What macronutrient? Proteins, fats, or carbohydrates? Where do you typically throw or direct your clients?
Well, typically carbohydrates, because that's the most commonly abused one, right?
Yeah, so
it's rare that I have somebody who just overeats protein. I need to restrict that, or overeats fat.
And protein satiates for the most part, and fat as well. So it's like, for me, it's an easier transition than the opposite, where, you know, like you're eliminating the protein intake or the fat intake. So for me, it's like it's just starting to kind of like taper down a bit on the carbohydrate intake is usually the first approach.
Yeah. Now, low carbohydrates is 50 grams, I would say, or lower. Although, you know, active people can be considered low carb, much higher. But for the average person, I typically don't ever bring anybody's carbs lower than 50 to 75, unless we're doing some kind of a keto diet. And that's not all the time. I do cycle people's carbohydrates. So this is another important thing. What might actually help you with your calorie deficit is to have some days that are higher calorie and some days that are lower calorie, but overall have it average out to the deficit you're looking for.
I like that a lot, especially when I'm actually not trying to cut very much. I just have like lower carb days on the days that they're not moving as much. Mm-hmm. So this all goes back into why it's so important to track and kind of seeing what a week looks like. And then if I'm trying to find a way that I'm going to restrict calories, like the day I'm going to do it, it's not going to be the day where I asked them to do squats with me or I told them to train MAPS anabolic. It's going to be, a trigger day or maybe a day of rest that I'm going to have them mm-hmm. scale back on the carbohydrates and take what a good day for you to be lower calories. Because I think doing a lower calorie, especially if you're not already in a high calories, on a day that you are pushing the body real hard is not ideal for you right now, especially when you're trying to also build your metabolism. Because a lot of the people that are wanting to go into a cut right now, you know, I really think that they should be more heavily focused on how they're training.
I mean,
I think that this is the area where most people make a mistake. What they do is they decide they have an X amount of time till they want to be in shape. They restrict calories and they do cardio and they do high intensity training. And I think all of them are the worst decision they can make.
It's so funny. So when you do diet alone, you'll burn body fat and muscle. When you do workout alone, especially if you do it the wrong way, you might not burn that much body fat and you'll affect your muscle. Sometimes you'll even lose muscle if you do it the wrong way. When you combine proper exercise with a proper calorie deficit diet, when you combine those two, here's what ends up happening. Most, if not all, the weight you lose is body fat, and oftentimes you maintain or sometimes even gain muscle, especially if you're a beginner. That is a beautiful scenario, because if you go in a deficit of calories and you're building muscles at the same time, you're actually speeding up your metabolism, which means that what is a 500 calorie deficit today naturally turns into a 700 calorie deficit tomorrow, which means you can increase your calories throughout your diet and still lose body fat. And I've done this many, many times. Well, I'll have someone start off at 1,500 calories, and throughout the process of proper training, I move their calories up to 1,700, 1,800, 2,000. The body fat loss is at the same rate. They're still losing body fat, but yet they're consuming more calories.
So this is also, that's such a great point. This is also why the way I'm deciding where the calories are going to be is not dictated by our weight loss on the scale up or down. Because in a perfect world, if I know that I got a hold of you and I'm training with you now and you weren't really training before, I know I'm sending a signal to your body to build muscle. And so I'd rather see your scale stay the same and stay there than actually see a dip 2-3 pounds every single week, even though your goal is to lose 15 pounds of fat. If I know that I'm increasing your volume of training, you weren't training before, now you're lifting weights properly, and I've got you eating whole natural foods and you're making better food choices, I actually like to see a scale stay the same.
Yeah.
Because then I know I'm getting a pretty close to an even exchange here where, we're losing a pound or so of body fat, but we're also adding about a pound of muscle. And so you're kind of...
Dude, I just had a client right now. I had bumped her calories 200 calories. And she was all freaked out because the scale went up a pound. And I said, nah, relax. It's probably water, whatever. And she goes and gets body fat tested. Okay. After 3 weeks of 200 more calories, her body weight actually stayed the same. She went down 1.5% body fat. She was tripping out that happened. I'm like, well, you're feeding your muscle, which sped up your metabolism. That metabolism boost actually not only offset the calories that we ate, but actually superseded it. And you lost more body fat. You know, the best way to work out for fat loss is, no joke,
build muscle.
Build muscle.
Yep.
You want to lift weights traditionally. Mm-hmm. Do a set, rest. Do a set, rest. You want to try, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to offset the signal that you're sending with your lower calories. You're trying to balance it out. It's funny because this high intensity, you know, do lots of cardio type workout, you know what's a good diet to eat when you're doing that workout? A high calorie diet, because those workouts are great for stamina. Yeah. Forget about burning body fat. Now, in the short term, they're effective. And when I say short term, I mean weeks.
Right, a week or two.
Yeah, I'm talking weeks. I'm not talking, you know, longer than a few weeks. So when you're doing those kind of workouts, really what you should, the only time I prescribe like those types of workouts is when clients are trying to build stamina. And the way I feed them is eat more. I'm not putting you on low calorie and having you do a shit ton of that type of activity, because we're just setting the stage for a metabolic rate that slows
down.
Yeah,
we're trying to preserve muscle as we're losing body fat, you know, going through that process, because you are going to have to restrict your calories. But what can I do to preserve my muscles is to lift weights. Mm-hmm. And that's why that's such a big thing to focus on. But everybody, not everybody, but most people get that wrong. They want to do everything at once to burn as much calories as possible in the quickest amount of time possible. And what we're just signaling to our body is that, oh, we're too heavy. We need to waste away all of this mass. We need to just get rid of it.
This is also why the way I recommend cardio is different now, too, than what it was when I first started as a trainer. So even though you're somebody who wants to lose body fat, I'm not actually recommending you to do any sort of traditional cardio right now. I'm referring back to our steps, right? So if I've got 12 weeks till summertime and I'm week over week increasing your steps, my goal is to get you to keep increasing steps through normal behaviors of the day, parking your car far away, like Sal said, walking the bathroom, take a walk with your wife, walk the dogs an extra time, get up a half hour earlier, go for a stroll in the morning, end your night with a walk, walk for 10 minutes after you're done with your lift and your workout. I'm trying to create all these little habits to keep increasing the steps week over week until, which is inevitable, there will come a point where, and all clients have get to this point with me where they go, Adam, it's really tough for me to get 22,000 steps in a day without just getting on the treadmill for 30 minutes and at least knocking out 2,000 or 3,000 of those steps really quick. Mm-hmm. That is like how I have them introduce cardio.
And most people, you probably don't even need to.
Right. Most don't even get there. But there are some, and my competitors tend to be the ones that are doing there because I'm pushing their limits a little bit further and faster, where I'm itching them up like in bigger chunks than just 1,000 steps. I'm pushing them to 4,000 steps every time I tell them I want more steps. And so eventually, yes, they get to a point where they're like, man, Adam, it's really hard to get that many steps without spending 1 hour on some days on the treadmill. I'm like, great, that's what I want you to do.
Here's the attitude that you want to take with exercise. Don't take the calorie burning attitude with your workouts. Stop that right now because it is not benefiting you in the long term. Instead, look at your workouts as ways to improve your performance in whatever you're training for. So I'm either training for strength, or I'm training for stamina, or I'm training for endurance, or I'm training for flexibility. The diet is what helps the fat loss. Now, you want to combine a type of training to offset the potential negatives of your diet. So, what are the potential negatives of a high-calorie diet? I need to be able to burn off these calories with lots of high-intensity type activity, and so maybe cardio and that type of stuff works, plus it fuels my stamina. What am I trying to offset with a low-calorie diet? A slower metabolism. Right. I'm going to try and build muscle.
Right.
So look at your workouts like, I am training for types of performance. That's it. Not that I'm trying to get leaner or do that kind of stuff. I'm trying to build performance. Diet helps me get leaner. How do I offset the negatives of my diet? Strength training offsets the negatives of a calorie deficit. It is by far the best way to exercise. If you're trying to get lean, I recommend everybody resistance train. But really, when it comes to that burn tons of tons of calories cardio type workouts, that's for stamina, and that's what I'll recommend. And I'll typically recommend people eat more calories with that to fuel the stamina building. You know what I'm saying?
I'm avoiding cardio at all costs for as long as I can with a client, just because I've never met somebody who's loves to get up and do an hour of running on the treadmill every single day of their life. And if that's you, that's you. But for the most part, it's a new thing that we're introducing in their life. So I want to create new habits and behaviors through walking, and then I'm going to introduce the cardio. If I introduce it, it's either going to be one, the LISS, which is, you know, your low intensity steady state. You're kind of cruising on there. You're just walking very slow pace for a half hour, an hour to get those steps up. Or post workout, I'm letting you do like a 12 to 15 minute cardio HIIT session. But you're not doing that until you've progressed the steps up naturally just through walking throughout your day. And you've now reached a point where you're struggling to get those steps in without adding some sort of cardio in there. If you've slowly progressed that way, you're going to be in a much better place than if you come out the gate and start prescribing yourself cardio.
Right. Now, I do have one more thing I want to cover, and this is a factor that I almost never talked about with my clients for most of my training career, and it did not become evident until later on.
Sleep?
Yeah. I learned the importance of that later on, and boy, did that make a difference in my clients. And the science supports it. Like, if your sleep is bad, if it's off, if you're not sleeping enough, you will eat more food. Yeah. You'll crave the wrong kinds of food. You'll reduce your body's ability to adapt to exercise. So you end up building less muscle, burning more body fat. You end up not doing those things. So it actually makes everything so much more difficult.
Oh, yeah, you're fighting yourself. Like, internally. Like, if you're not fully recovered and you're bringing that same workout, you know, the next day, That's just going to accumulate. The whatever stress you're bringing in is just going to keep compiling.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's funny. I was watching this documentary on sleep, and the scientist made such a great point. He says, look, he says, evolution has done a very, very good job of getting rid of things that are not beneficial to humans or things that are, you know, detrimental. And he says, if evolution could have gotten rid of sleep, it would have done so a long time ago. Because think about it. When you're sleeping, you're super vulnerable to attack.
Yeah.
You're not doing any work. You're not finding food. You're not trying to get shelter. You are literally this like unconscious piece of meat laying on the floor.
Super vulnerable.
Not doing anything, ready to be eaten. So evolution, at some point, if sleep wasn't as absolutely imperatively important as it is now, at some point, we would have just not been able to sleep. Now, most animals sleep because it's that important. And the today, especially, sleep is a problem because, well, we have electric lights on all the time. We have our technology in front of us all the time. And then we have this access to stimulants that we didn't have for most of human civilization. So people literally drink coffee all day long, take caffeine. Some people even go the pharmaceutical route with stimulants. And they get by on 6 hours of sleep every single night, not realizing that it's making them fatter, making them have less muscle, making it very difficult for their body to adapt to exercise.
Well, you got to explain that part. So you got to explain the difference between parasympathetic and sympathetic and why it's important that we have both and the importance of us being and why we're not recovering the way we should be recovering.
Well, with sleep is your rest and repair and recover. It sets you up. It gets rid of waste. It consolidates thoughts and ideas. It builds connections between neurons in the brain. The hormones that are released when sleep are the ones that repair and rebuild the body. It's absolutely essential for not just good health, but again, because here's the deal: you have a bucket that you pull from with stress. All stress pulls from the same bucket, and exercise is a stress on the body. And if you're not sleeping, you're working with a smaller bucket. If your day is very stressful, you're working with a smaller bucket. And so you're not able to work out like you normally could. And you're really negating the potential of positive effects of exercise. I mean, I've had clients just work on their sleep and notice fat loss and muscle gain from that alone.
That tripped me out. I had the same thing where that was the one component that was missing. And it wasn't apparent until, you know, throughout the process, it was like just spinning the wheels. Like, you know, you're consistent, you're eating right. Like all these factors are, you know, you're doing everything right. But what was lacking was the fully being recovered and rested, having sleep.
The irony is that the people that tend to be the greatest offenders on the sleep point of all this are also the greatest offenders on the calorie, on the exercise they choose, and the cardio.
Yeah,
they're cortisol junkies.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They get that. This is always really hard for me to explain to somebody who like loves like an Orange Theory or an F45 class or loves their, you know, high intensity training, because try arguing with someone like that who is a cortisol junkie and they fucking love the feeling they get from it. They for sure feel better. They're right.
Yeah.
They for sure, it gives them a rush. And there's nothing you can say to them to get them to believe that they're not feeling that, because they feel it.
Just like perpetuating the problem.
Yeah, just like insulin resistance. Like if your body's constantly exposed to high levels of insulin, your body will stop responding to the same amount of insulin, and you'll need more and more insulin to produce the same response. This is because receptors get downregulated. Your body becomes less sensitive to that particular hormone. Well, that can happen with cortisol as well. So if you're high stress all the time, the same amount of cortisol now no longer feels like it used to. You're going to feel fatigued. And so you're going to seek out things that squirt more cortisol out and make you feel better. So that'll be more high intensity exercise, mm-hmm. pushing your body harder, restricting your sleep even more, drinking more coffee,
showing up late to meetings and all this.
Oh, it creates interesting behaviors. It's been said, you know, this is a speculation that a lot of trainers and functional medicine practitioners will say, is that these cortisol junkies they have this chronic problem of being late places.
It's like self-sabotage.
Because it's almost like their body's trying to produce situations.
And it's like talking to a junkie on anything else. Like, try telling them that they're addicted to it.
Yeah.
You know, it turns into like this argument and debate. Like, there's nothing you can tell me that you're going to tell me that this workout, I don't love, this workout's great for me. Yeah. I'm always in the best shape of my life during this time. I feel the best when it's like, fuck, how do I get this person to understand that you're stressed at work all day long, you're stressed with your home life all the time, you're fucking not eating like you're supposed to, you're not wrestling, and then on top of that, you're fucking training like this?
Yeah.
Like, no, trust me, there's a reason why you don't have the body you've always dreamed of, because you're fucking pushing it so hard, it's revolting back on you.
Well, you're redlining.
Yeah, you just like modern life has created the need for structured and planned activity, because like modern life is very sedentary, right? So I wake up and there's not much I need to do to get ready, and then I get in the car and I drive somewhere, and then I get out of my car and I sit down all day long, and then when I'm done, I get my car, drive. So it's a very sedentary lifestyle, very, very little activity, and that's just the way modern life is. So we have to structure practices to increase our activity. We have to track it to figure that out. Well, the same thing now is becoming true with rest and repair, where before, there were lots of quiet times throughout the day. Like back in the day, and I say back in the day, it was like 15 years ago. If I drove somewhere, that was it. I mean, unless I play the radio and stuff like that, there was no one with me. I was by myself. No one could contact me if I'm somewhere else. I was quiet. If I'm sitting in line waiting for something, I don't have my phone to distract me all the time. And before that, we didn't have electronic lights that kind of kept us distracted and awake. It was natural. These natural periods of rest and repair were part of our natural lives. Well, today you have to make practices. So I like to tell clients today now, as I say, look, 2 hours before bed, 1 to 2 hours before bed, I want you to do a sleep routine. And that consists of either one of two things. Either A, turn all the lights down in your house and go by candlelight, if possible. Turn off all your electronics, if possible, for at least an hour, better yet, 2 hours before bed. That tells the brain the sun has come down, that it's nighttime. Studies show that you produce more melatonin when you do that. But it's also a time for you to be quiet, reflective, allow yourself to not be distracted so you can process thoughts, feelings, and emotions and all that stuff. And believe me, this makes a big difference. And there's science that supports this. Or the second option, which is more viable for most people, or pragmatic, is wear some blue blocker glasses. At least block out that blue light and then avoid stressful situations and things. So maybe don't work an hour before bed. That's probably the worst time to work. You know, I'm going to get on my emails and get on this stressful work done. Turn it off, shut it off, put on your blue
blockers.
Definitely
don't argue with people on social media.
Yeah, that's
don't do that.
Or your spouse, right? Or your girlfriend or boyfriend, right? So I like to give people kind of this nighttime routine, and then I tell them to schedule their sleep so they have at least 7 hours, ideally 8 hours of sleep. So if I know I need to be in bed by 10 p.m. so that I can have 7 or 8 hours of sleep, then by 8:30, lights are going down, I'm off electronics, it's real quiet, like I said, I put my blue blockers on and do the same thing.
You know, it's funny, it makes me laugh when we talk about this because I can't help but think back to like 25-year-old me and...
I would have laughed at that.
I don't think you could convince me.
No.
It's crazy. But then I think of the 37-year-old me now, and it's like so obvious to me now. Like I completely feel the difference, notice the difference. But when you're in those early 20s, you feel like you're invincible. Like these things don't really register yet for you until you start to age a little bit.
And then it sounds really old and stupid.
Right. And so I always try and tell when I'm talking to my younger guys or girls that about this stuff that think it's no big deal and then they fall asleep with their phone right next in their hand from texting all night long or doing whatever. I'm just like, man, I promise if you can learn these behaviors now, when you get my age, it won't be as difficult to do it because I actually struggle with these things.
Yep.
It's tough. I've watched TV. Katrina was the first one to really break me from that. Like I've had a TV in my bedroom since I was a kid. Like that was just a habit of mine. That was one of the things that she's like, and her excuse obviously is for the intimacy. I mean, there's studies that show that TV in the bedroom decreases intimacy by X amount. And so she's like, I'm not letting the TV fuck my game up. Right. So but I also notice it at how much it's improved my sleep by not having that. So.
Well, I mean, what I like to tell youngsters is look, however well you're doing now, because when you're young, you get away with a lot, right? But it's whatever you're doing now, you'll do that much better.
Right, it's still suboptimal.
If you inject some of these changes, like if you get good sleep, and if you're 20 and you get good sleep, you're going to build more muscle, burn more body fat, be faster, be stronger, be better at school, be better at work, whatever. you're just going to do that much better. As you get older, this stuff becomes a requirement for you to just function. So,
yeah.
But these are all the, I mean, I guess what we just covered, what did we just cover? We covered learn to track your food, learn to track your movement. You want to be in a calorie deficit to burn body fat, train properly, lift weights, and then focus on that repair and recovery, especially sleep. Those are the five basic things. Like if you do those five things right there, and the first two really are just setting you up for the next three, because tracking by itself isn't going to do anything for you, but that's going to give you the information to cut your calories and watch your macros and all that stuff. If you just do those things right there, that's like 95% of anything you need to do to get your body lean and fit or whatever in however much time you have, even if it's 12 weeks from now, summertime.
It's a simple recipe.
That's it. Look, go to mindpumpfree.com and check out our free guides. Lots of free resources there. Check them out. They'll help you along your fitness journey. Also, if you want to find us on social media, you can find our individual pages. So you can find us on Instagram. Justin is at mindpumpjustin. My page is Mind Pump Sal, and Adam is Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.